We are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philly Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Connington. Joining me, as always, the one, the only, it's Mike Gilletto.
How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right.
All right. Now, before we get into today's show, I'm here to tell you that you can find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and lastwordonsports.com. You can also find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can find me at K Collington and Mike at Mike underscore Gilletto. Now, we got a lot to talk about this week.
We do, yeah.
The NHL draft is this weekend.
Yep.
And we're going to get into that. The Flyers have the 14th and 19th picks. There's a lot of speculation. Will they move up? Will they move back? Will they stay where they're at? Will they trade a piece? Will they? There's a lot. There's a lot that the Flyers can do.
Yeah. No, there's a lot that they could do.
They could move as high as 3. They could move back out of the first round. They could stay where they're at. There's a whole bunch of options. But before we get into that, we're going to talk some Phillies.
Yeah.
And the Phillies kind of turned it around a little bit this week.
They still gave up another 12 runs to the Milwaukee Brewers.
How many games did they win?
That doesn't matter.
Yes, it does.
Okay. No, but not every win is created equal.
They won both of their series this week. In the standing, yes, every win is created equal. That's how the standings work.
No, but over a length of a whole season, not every win is created equal. No.
Every win counts for the same amount in the standings.
They still gave up 12 runs to a Bruins team.
Brewers. Every win gets you the same percentage closer to the playoffs, period.
Okay, sure.
So every win literally is the same.
Okay. They still gave up 12 runs to the Brewers and then another 9 who they play this weekend.
How many games out of the division are they?
They are technically, they're 4 games back.
Okay. They're 4 games back.
Yeah.
You know, you're still not out of the woods. I believe they were also 4 games back a week ago.
Yeah, they're just kind of hovering right now.
Yeah, you won both of your series this week. So it's a decent week. You're turning it around a little bit as we get closer to the All-Star game and things like the trade deadline. You know, rumors are still flying around about Manny Machado. And there's somebody else, too, that people are talking about the Phillies adding.
I know Cole Hamels is a name that's been tossed around.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I know J.A. Happ is another name tossed around.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I didn't even know he was still in the league.
Yeah, he plays for Toronto, I believe, still. So, they need pitching. And yeah. Even if you get a guy like Cole Hamels or Happ, who either of them haven't been great this year, but they're an arm. And
yeah, they're nostalgia pickups, really, more than anything.
Right, and you could either put them in the rotation and move one of your starters to the bullpen to help that atrocious bullpen that we have.
Right.
Or just move them straight to the bullpen.
I think if you're getting a guy like Hamels, you got to put him in the bullpen. Because he was in the Cy Young race, 2 years ago?
A few years. I don't know if it was two, but...
He might not be done yet. He's still got some juice left in the arm. And I think if he comes back, in the starting rotation.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, just because he is a Phillies legend, right? He was on that World Series team. He has been kind of like, he's a Philly. If he comes back, you got to give him the respect to put him in the rotation.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I get it. It's just who do you move out at that point?
I don't know.
Because, you have Arrieta, Nola, Velasquez. They're not going to have Pivetta's pitching well. Eflin, who's the only person on this Phillies rotation that has beat the Brewers this year.
Sure.
So he's beat them twice.
I don't know. It's probably Eflin.
And then maybe move him to the bullpen, and then you send Adam Morgan as far away from this team as possible because he is awful. And maybe, I'm tired of seeing Adam Morgan.
And maybe it's Nick Pivetta, or maybe, you know, it's Pivetta, but then you kind of spot start him in. So we still get some starts through the rest of the year.
Yeah, maybe you
kind of alternate every time through the rotation.
Yeah, or maybe you have 6 starters until the playoffs. If you make the playoffs, the postseason, you only really run 4 pitchers.
Yeah, and by then you'll know who your 4 best pitchers are.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Phillies do.
Yeah, but this team, they're still dreadful in the field. They're tied for 2nd in errors with 53 errors.
Well, that's what you expect out of a young team.
Well, no, I just think it's a matter of people just playing out of position. You have Hoskins, who's a first baseman, playing in left field. You have Kingery, who's a second baseman, playing at short. You have J.P. Crawford, who's a shortstop, playing at third. It's all over the field. Guys are just playing out of position.
Yeah, and until those guys are either comfortable in their current positions or moved back to their natural positions, That's what's going to happen. You know, like, Rhys Hoskins has only been playing left field for 3 months. Scott Kingery has only been playing shortstop for 3 months. Give him a little time.
I think at this point Kingery isn't hitting the ball really well. He's bad in the field. At this point, put Crawford there, who isn't even really hitting the ball well either. Put Kingery on the bench or send him back to the minors and get some starts.
I'd like to see him go back to AAA. Yeah, like and send get him a back to seasoning.
Send him back to AAA. Let him hit every day and then just put Crawford in the shortstop role.
Yeah,
and so then everybody can play their, and then you put Franco at third, keep him at third, and this way everybody's comfortable with their role.
And I'm sure that's something that Gabe has thought about, and you know, maybe that comes if the team goes back into a little bit of a slide again. They rebounded a little bit this week, so it's kind of hard to make a move this week. But if they slip back down, then you know maybe you see him do that.
Yeah,
maybe we'll see moving forward. Again, this is a young team. They have plenty of time. There's a lot of baseball left to be played. And if two or three guys get hot, this team can start winning a whole bunch of games, go on a tear, and be in a playoff spot.
They just have to start hitting the ball. I mean, you have Alfaro, who's batting 241, Williams, 236, Santana, 225. I can keep going. I mean, Kingery, 222, Crawford, 189. I mean, they're just not hitting the ball.
Yeah.
So.
Something's got to change. But
you would think.
You would think. And you would think that something will change at some point and things will turn around. But until then, we're kind of stuck with the Phillies, right? Like, there's nothing this team can really do unless maybe they're just holding. They're in a bit of a holding pattern, and they don't want to make too many roster moves because they're waiting to see if they can get Machado away from the O's.
Maybe.
Right? Like, maybe that move happens, and we talked about maybe Michael Franco going in that deal. We talked about maybe Cesar Hernandez going in that deal. Maybe even like a Rhys Hoskins going in that deal.
I don't think they're moving Hoskins.
I don't think so either, but it's a possibility. So maybe the Phillies and especially Gabe are kind of in a bit of a holding pattern because they don't want to shuffle people around too much. And they want the right guys to get spotlight time to showcase them to the O's and try to entice them to make the move for Machado.
I mean, maybe I wouldn't be opposed to getting a guy like Machado. I mean, he's one of the best hitters in the league.
Right.
But at this point, I don't know if you just sit around and wait to hopefully get him. Like, I think you've got to start making changes now, and then you adjust if you do end up getting a guy like Machado.
Yeah. Again, it's early enough in the season that we're kind of just along for the ride here for a little bit. You can send a guy down. But I think Gabe would rather let a guy like Kingery just work out his issues, even at the major league level. Because sending him back to AAA won't really do much, right? Like, you're only getting so much better at AAA. It's a whole different animal when it comes to hitting.
Right? Sure.
AAA pitchers are a large step below major league baseball hitters.
Obviously, but maybe he's just not ready. I mean, or maybe move him to the bench and get him pinch hit opportunities spot start him, you know, a couple days a week.
See, I just want him to get as many at bats as he can and just power through the trouble.
No, not if you think his team's a playoff team.
Well, who says they think that?
They think they're a playoff team.
I don't know.
I mean, you have to. They're 4 games out. I mean, they were at one point winning, you know, they were ahead in the division at one point.
But
so.
I think they're being patient with their player development and would rather them work things through at the plate than on the bench or in AAA. Or, like, it just doesn't seem like an effective way. The only way Scott Kingery is going to get better at hitting major league pitchers is by hitting against major league pitchers. And sending him to AAA or putting him on the bench is not going to do those things.
I mean, I guess.
Does that make sense?
No, I guess. But, I mean, that still isn't even really... I mean, it's a big issue, but they still have other issues. I mean, to give up... In 3 games against the Brewers, they gave up 12 runs, 12 runs, 13 runs.
Yeah, in this conversation, we've literally talked about the fact that the Phillies need a pitcher, they need defensive help, and they need offensive help.
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard to call them a playoff team great in any of the 3 measures of the game.
I think that they can be a playoff team.
And that's fair.
I think the starting pitching is good enough to get them there.
I think so, too, but it's hard to just say that, you know, without any qualifiers on it. It's hard to say, yeah, they think they're a playoff team. Well, they need help in 3 of the 3 areas.
I mean, sure, but everybody can use help. I mean, you get a team like Houston, who's one of the best teams in the league, and they need a closer. Ken Giles is awful over there. They don't even have a closer, and that's the best team in baseball. So every team has a weakness.
I think they expect Ken Giles to turn it around. He had a good year last year, and he was okay the year before that.
They don't trust him.
I mean, sure.
I just know for a fact they don't trust him.
You know for a fact, huh?
Yes, I know for a fact.
And is it because you listen to Josh Ennis a lot?
Yes, exactly. Oh, okay. That is why.
Anyway, but, we're not going to talk about that clown on this show.
But I know for a fact that, you know, even a team like Houston, who's the best team in the league, they need a closer. But it's,
yeah, there's not 30 stellar closers in the MLB. Like, that's just not
obviously,
how it
but
works.
I'm just saying that every team has a weakness. So just because we're saying that the Phillies have a weakness doesn't mean that they're not a playoff team. Because I think they can be. You know, the Marlins and the Mets are both bad, so you could just beat up on them, get some more wins. I think it's a three-way race at this point. Atlanta doesn't seem to have slowed down, which is insane. And the Nationals are the Nationals. But
right. Yeah, they're going to have 100 wins, you know, 95 wins.
Maybe,
and
they're only 37-31. Harper's not hitting the ball like he usually does.
Yeah, you would imagine that'll turn around.
Yeah.
You would think. So. It's a long season, and again, we're going to keep you guys updated on the Phillies. I think we've kind of exhausted Phillies talk for this week. You know, it's Gabe's world. We're all just living in it. So we're actually going to move on. And okay. we're going to talk about the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles received their rings this week.
Was that beautiful?
And they are pretty.
Yeah. Did you catch the video of Merrill Reese receiving his ring?
I did not.
Oh God! It was a very heartwarming thing because he's been in the organization for what 40, 50
longer
years?
Than anybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's awesome. It's insane. But he put it on. He was teary eyed.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. A couple days after the Super Bowl, I heard his call, and. Yeah, I got a little choked up, right?
Like, yeah. Absolutely.
I didn't really get choked up at the win. Like, I was happy. I was a little misty, but I wasn't really choked up. Hearing Merrill call it and just hearing the unadulterated joy in his voice.
He's a fan. Right. Like, it's just what he is.
You have to be.
Yeah.
And he's always been the first to criticize the team when they're bad. Literally the first, because he can call it while the play is happening. And, you know, he'll talk about poor efforts. And he'll talk about when a team is playing poorly or a bad coaching decision or when a team is doing well. And the fact that he got to see this team climb the mountain and, you know, become the best football team in the world, that was huge. And I like the fact that obviously he was getting a ring, but I really need to watch that video.
Yeah, it's really heartwarming. Hey, yeah. He puts it on and he's teary-eyed for sure.
I'm sure he is. Yeah. He's been around for 40 years.
Yeah, he's a very passionate guy.
Yeah.
So he's a fan, but the ring itself was pretty.
The ring is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Did you hear the story about the woman who worked for the team for 20 years or whatever it was? Chip Kelly fired her.
I think I heard something. I think I heard something about this.
And they gave her a ring, even though she was fired like 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a good judgment, good taste.
It was excellent. I think she was PR or she was something along those lines.
Okay.
I think Merrill had some nice things to say about her on Twitter.
Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, your mom was always a nice, or your aunt was always a nice woman. The person's
right.
Niece or nephew was talking about it. But
right.
It was a really nice story that they gave her a ring even after she had been out of the organization for 2 full years. And it's really cool to see the good works that this organization is doing with something as simple as the championship rings.
Yeah. I mean, they've kind of turned the whole thing around after Kelly left. I mean, this place was almost a dumpster fire.
I wonder if they offered Chip one.
No. Why? Are you joking?
No, as a little bit
no,
of a...
No, what the hell is he... What little, the hell did he do to deserve that?
As a little bit of a rub-in.
No.
Right? Because I feel like he left on pretty sour terms.
Of course.
So it might be nice to be like, hey, Chip, we got this without you. Do you want one? We'll give you one.
I don't think they need to do that in order for him to feel sour about it.
That's fair. He's probably real salty.
Nah, he's coaching it. I think UCLA. So I'm sure he's got bigger things to worry about.
Yep, that's fair. You know?
So
Chip. Chip was Chip.
Yep.
I'm glad we didn't have this show when Chip was around because
we would have had some stuff to say.
I felt.
And listen, there was a very successful couple of years under Chip.
Let's put it this way: I felt like Chip. The way you feel about Dave Haxtell.
Okay. That's not understandable. So, But I mean, there were some successful years under Chip. I mean, he went 10-6 in 2 years. Yeah. And then 7-9 in the last one, or 6-10 in the last one.
I would like to point out, I called this on Facebook when he got hired.
I think a lot of people did.
No. I said, you know, this is his record year one. This is his record year two. This is his record year three, and he gets fired.
Yeah.
And looking back on the post, I've seen it pop up a couple times. And looking back on the post, it's almost exactly what happened.
Toot your own horn here. Go ahead.
Like, oh, yeah. And I'm pretty proud of that. So, anyway, yeah, that's about it. The Eagles got their rings.
It's just another reminder that they're Super Bowl champions. Yeah,
obviously the banner will go up, you know, their first home game. And we'll be able to see the banner, and I'm sure that'll be a really special moment for the city and for the organization. And that's going to be fun. That's going to be when it really sinks in.
Yeah, like for sure.
The trophy's cool. The ring is cool. But once that banner goes up forever, that's when it sinks in.
Yeah, and I think they do it on a Thursday night against the Atlanta Falcons, I believe, right? So that'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, it absolutely will be, and I can't wait. But, you know, until we get there, we do have a couple months before that happens.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we have some NHL events coming up this week.
We do. It starts on Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah, so the season just ended. The Caps won about a week and a half ago. The Toronto.
Did you catch any of the parade?
I caught some of the highlights of the speeches and stuff. I didn't watch any of the
live. Did you hear
Ovechkin? I did.
he's great.
It wasn't Kelsey, but it was fine.
It was great. And then did you hear at the end, he's like, girls and boys and babes?
No, I didn't.
Oh, it's great. It's lovely. It's funny. I should have played it on here. Maybe I'll play it at the end here.
Maybe. So the Caps won about a week and a half ago. They had their parade last week. You know, last week the AHL season wrapped up with the Toronto Marlies taking the Calder Cup.
Surprise, surprise.
Already this week, we have the NHL Awards, and then on Friday night, the draft starts.
Yeah.
It's already time to turn over the new league year.
Yep.
There was just a big trade this past weekend.
There was, yeah. We don't want to talk about that at all.
Montreal traded Alex Galchenyuk to Arizona for Max Domi in one of the weirder one-for-one trades.
Yeah.
Although in Montreal, in Mark Bergevin's tenure in Montreal, they're starting to become pretty commonplace. This is the same GM who traded PK Subban for Shea Weber.
Yeah, it's almost like,
and they're now overpaying an old Shea Weber for the next 7 years.
It's almost like that guy in Boston, drawing a blank on his name, but ended up trading Tyler Seguin
and
a bunch of other like high end names.
Yeah, he's gotten roasted for that.
Taylor Hall.
Taylor Hall wasn't a Boston.
Well, no, but when he went to Edmonton, it's a guy that's in Edmonton. What's his name?
Oh.
I'm drawing a blank on his name. But then he went to Edmonton and traded away Taylor Hall. And so. Yeah,
but Mark Bergevin is going to get himself run out of town. I wonder how long that they're going to let him have the reins over there before somebody in ownership finally comes up and says, Mark, like, you got to stop. You're killing us.
It wasn't just talent that influences trade.
I know.
Like,
and it's the same as the Subban for Weber deal.
Well, in 2 years, Galchenyuk's an unrestricted free agent.
Okay.
Whereas Domi,
he signed a bridge deal. He's a UFA in 2 years too.
Is he?
Yes. He signed for 3.2 for the next 2 years.
He might still be restricted at the end of that.
Okay, maybe. But then,
because I don't believe he has 6 year service time yet. If you have 6 years service time, that's when you become a restricted. An unrestricted free agent,
or 27,
or one or the other. And he's I don't think he has either of them. So he's probably still a restricted free agent at the end of that.
Okay, but still, it's like.
And I mean, maybe they just felt that they had to get tougher. Galchenyuk isn't really a tough guy or a grinder by any means. Maybe they just felt that they.
I think what
needed to be more physical.
I don't know. Domi's only a year younger. It's an interesting trade.
Yeah, like I said, I think the contract has a lot to do with it.
I think Arizona is 100% getting the better end of it.
And I don't think Galchenyuk's really a superstar by any means.
I think Montreal has buried him. I think he'll do well in another system. I think he'll do well with Arizona.
Who does Arizona have?
They're going to be good this year.
Dylan Strome, who we still haven't seen anything about. Let me tell you something. The Strome siblings have all been busts for the most. Like, Ryan Strome was supposed to be this hot, you know, high-end thing. Ryan Strome goes on, he's a middle six at best player. And then you have Dylan Strome, who's projected to be his next great thing. Hasn't even sniffed the NHL yet. Maybe played a game or two. Okay. And then you have Matthew Strome, who was projected to be a second-round pick. Falls to the fifth or sixth round. So, I mean, again, he just got drafted last year. So
it's hard
too early
to call him a bust.
It's too early to call him a bust. But he fell from the second to the fourth or fifth. So I'm tired of seeing these Strome brothers. Okay.
That's fair. I think it's too early to call them a bust. You know, Matthew Strome hasn't even stepped on the ice in Lehigh Valley yet.
Obviously.
And if he dropped, listen, and if he dropped and the Flyers got him in the fourth or fifth and he's really a second round talent, it's a hell of a steal by Ron Hextall.
Obviously.
You know, if he ends up impacting the NHL roster at all, that's a great draft pick.
Sure. Like, I was just airing my grievances with the Strome brothers.
And there are people saying that he's going to be fighting for a roster spot out of camp. No, I don't think so. I think
an NHL roster spot? He's got no chance in hell.
I think he'll end up in Lehigh Valley.
I don't think he has a chance in hell.
I think he'll be around for a long time in the preseason. I think he'll be one of the last cuts.
Maybe, just to get him ice time. But
I genuinely think he'll be one of the last cuts, and he'll be fighting for that Lindblom. Like, he'll be in a similar spot that Lindblom was last year.
No, I don't buy it.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think he's probably not ready.
He can't skate.
He probably needs another season in Lehigh Valley, but I think he's closer than you think he is.
Okay. So, I mean, I hope you're right.
Yeah.
But.
So, anyway, that trade went down between Montreal and Arizona, and that was kind of the first big deal of the year, right? Like, I think Carolina made a real minor trade with somebody while the playoffs were happening. It was like a sixth round pick for some mid-level.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, trade. But yeah, I remember there's something
it
going
was some,
on.
It was some nothing trade. But this is the first real big trade of the offseason.
Oh, for sure.
And with the draft on Friday, we expect to see at least one or two more, right? There always is.
Yeah, on draft day, absolutely.
Last year we had the Braden Schenn move.
Which nobody really saw coming,
Coming. Now, looking back, it kind of makes sense because the Flyers were kind of wing heavy last year. You know, especially in the top six.
Maybe.
Braden Schenn probably would have gotten pushed down to the third line last year with Wayne Simmons.
Maybe. That's a great third line.
Sure. But, you know, you're paying him $5-plus million to be a third liner. It's not really where you want to be.
Sure.
So I still think the Flyers won that trade. I know we're a year on. And,
yeah.
But the awards are Wednesday night.
Before
the draft Friday, the awards are Wednesday night. We're going to see the first trailer for NHL 19, which I'm excited about.
Okay.
And then we have some awards. Now, there are only two Flyers up for awards.
There are, yep.
And it's Sean Couturier, who's nominated for the Selke.
Yep.
And then Wayne Simmons is nominated for the Bill Masterton, I believe.
It is. Hold on. Just had it up. No, the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award.
Oh, the Leadership Award, right.
Yeah.
So that one doesn't really... That one's not really affected by on the ice.
No.
So it's hard to evaluate that one.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard to make a prediction on that one. But we do have the Selke.
I was gonna say, the major ones. You want to give predictions for all the major ones?
Yeah, we can do predictions for all the major ones. Let's start with the hometown relevant one.
Okay.
And we have the Frank J. Selke Trophy. And the finalists are, as always, Patrice Bergeron.
Yep.
Right? It's the Bergeron Award.
Yeah.
Anje Kopitar, who had a stellar season out in Los Angeles. And then for the first time, Sean Couturier.
Yeah.
And we've kind of talked about him as a Selke nominee for 4 or 5 years now, which is weird to say because he's only 24 right. years old. He's 25 years old. And we've been talking about him as a Selke nominee since his sophomore season.
Right.
And for the first time this year, his offensive game developed to the point where he was actually a reasonable include.
Yeah.
And he got the nomination.
Of course. And he's kind of in the conversation now where he'll be in the conversation the rest of his career.
Right.
Because once you're there for life.
Especially because the guys he's nominated with, you know, he's 25 years old. Kopitar is, what, 30? And Bergeron's 32?
Like 30, Bergeron's right around there. Kopitar might be 29-ish. But okay. It's right around 30.
But either
sure.
way, a couple years older than him.
Yeah.
So, you know... Couturier is still young. Couturier is still developing.
Yeah.
Couturier is getting better.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you're going to see another 70-point season from him. Or whatever he had.
I think you're going to see at least that.
I hope that. I haven't seen enough out of his career that makes me think this is the new normal for Sean Couturier.
If your first line this year is the same first line you had in the second half of last year, where it's Giroux on his left side, Konechny on his right side, or flip that in some capacity, whatever. Sure. That's a real good line again. And I think that I don't know if Giroux gets 100, But I think Couturier
gets
seven.
I mean, all those guys had career years. But, I mean, it's hard to call that a career year for Konechny because it's his second year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Couturier and Drouin, it was career year. So what makes – I just don't see anything to make them repeat the same success.
Listen, I don't know if Giroux gets 100 again, but I think Couturier gets 70 again. And I think Giroux could easily be in the 80s or 90s.
Maybe.
And if he's point per game for the second year in a row, that'll quiet down a lot of the haters.
Oh, of course.
Because there's been a lot of flack towards the Flyers captain. And this year is kind of
right being, and wrong.
Right. And this year is kind of being looked at as a flash in the pan. But if he comes out next year,
I don't know if it's a flash in the pan. It's
still, that's what people are saying. I'm not saying that.
No, I know. But it's also, I think people tend to, it's more of a recency bias where people tend to look at what did he do in the playoffs and he completely vanished from the face of the earth.
That's fair.
So that's what people look at with Sean or with Claude Drew.
What I'm saying is if he has 35 points by Christmas, people won't be quite as frantic about him having to go and having to trade him. But all right, so obviously we all would like Sean Couturier to win.
He's got no chance.
I know. Who do you think's got it?
It's Anze Kopitar, and it's locked up it's in the bag. It's just going to happen. So Kopitar had just an outrageous season.
No, I know he did, but I think Bergeron also had a really good season. And I'm interested. Do me a favor, look up.
Yeah, I got
look up
it.
Kopitar's plus minus, and I'm going to look up Bergeron's.
Plus minus is such a overused stat, though.
I know, but because for the Selke, that's all you really have.
No, I know it's all you really have, unless you go to Corsi. Brawl Street Hockey.
Who?
But
sorry, who was that? No, who are you talking about?
The reason that I have such a gripe with plus minus is it's an absolute disgrace that you get a minus if you're on the ice when a team scores an empty net goal against you.
Yeah,
that's awful.
Sure, but that's so minor. It's like Bergeron was plus 21 this year, which is fine. You know, it's not outrageous. He played on a good team, so it's kind of hard to, you know, lock that one up, but that is a good number.
I'm looking it up. Hold on, I just had it.
He was also 57% on faceoffs.
Who do you want me to look up? Kopitar.
You look up Kopitar.
He also was plus 21.
Okay, what was his faceoff percentage this year?
54.13%.
Bergeron was 57.31%, which is outrageous.
Yeah, but he's always been that in his career.
No, I know.
I wouldn't look at faceoff percentage to win the Selke. How many points did Bergeron put up this year?
I think it matters.
What? How many points did Bergeron put up this year?
I just closed it. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, because, I mean, Kopitar had 92 points.
You know, no, he absolutely got the better of him in the points in the points race. Bergeron put up 66 points in 64 games, though.
Okay.
He missed a chunk of the season.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He missed the last, like, month or two of the season. Right.
So the numbers are closer than, you know, then they appear when you just see 66 for Bergeron.
Yeah, no, you're right, but Kopitar, I think.
You know, if you transpose that over the whole season, that's 85 or 86 points.
Yeah, but also
now all of a sudden it's a close race.
Right, I also think Kopitar kind of carried the team more than Bergeron did.
I mean, I agree. You know, in Boston, you got your Marchand and your McAvoy and your, you know, they're a good young team.
Oh, for sure.
You know, Chara had a decent year. Tuukka Rask is a great goalie. You know, you could kind of say
guys.
You could kind of say the same thing in LA because Jeff Carter had a great year this year.
Sure,
and you know they do have Drew Doughty back there, and they do have Jonathan Quick in the cage.
Sure,
they're pretty similar teams. You know, in just the way the teams are built. I think the Bruins are actually doing a better job at getting younger than the Kings are.
Yeah, they have a guy like Jake DeBrusk who came in and had a really good rookie year.
Jake DeBrusk, Charlie McAvoy, and LA has, Adrian Kempe?
Yeah. I don't love. Like, I mean, Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson aren't insane. They're like 25-ish.
They're not really all that young.
25, 26. They're like the youngest guys they have, I think.
Yeah, I think the Bruins are doing a better job at flipping into a younger generation. That being said, they also got further in the playoffs.
Yep.
So, you know, because LA got swept out by Vegas, which is great. And I love it because I hate LA.
Do you hate LA?
Yeah, I just do.
Okay.
It's mostly Drew Doughty.
I love Drew Doughty, though. I love the way that he plays.
Whatever. Anyway. Okay, so I think Bergeron's going to get it. And I know you think Kopitar is going to get it.
Yeah.
So there's our Selke prediction.
I think it's a lock. I think because, Kopitar is in the conversation for the heart. So.
No, I know. And
I mean, how are you going to be the heart and not be the Selke? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway, we're gonna predict the other ones real quick. The Vezina Trophy, Connor Hellebuck from Winnipeg, Pekka Rinne from Nashville, and Andre Vasilevskiy from Tampa. And this is for the Vezina, best goalie. Who do you think? This is a tough one.
It is close.
This one's too close to call, man.
Yeah. It's close. I think I lean towards Vasilevskiy or Hellebuck.
See, I think Vasilevskiy had a little bit of a down year, especially in the first half of the year. And I think Vasilevsky's numbers look insane because he just had such a good team in front of him.
But nah, you could say that about all these teams, dude, though. You could say that all.
Tampa and plus, is stacked, though.
Sure, offensively. Victor, not defensively.
Victor Hedman's one of the best in the game.
Okay, sure. That's all they have on defense.
Who's Winnipeg's best defenseman? Bufflin?
Yes.
I'd rather have Hedman than Bufflin.
Sure, but look at the second guy. Would you rather have Trouba than anybody on...
Mikhail Sergachev? I'd rather have Sergachev.
Not yet. No, not yet.
Anyway, I think it might actually go to Pekka Rinne.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Rinne on this one.
Okay.
But we're not going to go super deep on these just because they're not really Flyers relevant. And, you know, we don't really care. I'm going to say Rinne. Who you got? You said you were leaning Vasilevskiy?
No, I'm going to go Hellebuck.
You're going to go Hellebuck?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Ben, if you want to predict and write these down and we'll do our little prediction game again. That was fun for the playoffs.
Yeah, it was.
So next we move to the Norris. And there were a lot of Flyers fans who were pretty upset that Ghost wasn't a nominee here.
He was in the conversation. I know. I think the nominees made sense.
When the full voting list is revealed, he was probably fifth or sixth in voting.
Right.
Now, they only give us the top three. And the top three is P.K. Subban from Nashville, Victor Hedman from those same Tampa Bay Lightning, and Drew Doughty from the Los Angeles Kings. Now, we just talked about Hedman versus Bufflin. Is Bufflin a Norris finalist?
No, he's not.
Just checking.
But you also have to, I mean, you just literally said, look at the team Tampa has.
No, okay. So honestly, and that's the reason I'm taking P.K. Subban here.
Okay.
Over Doughty or Hedman. Although, I hate Doughty, but it might actually just be him. Doughty kind of carried that team in a lot of ways. And Victor Hedman was playing behind probably the best top line in hockey with Kucherov and Stamkos. And whoever played with them, I don't even know who played with them most of the season. Was it Tyler Johnson? But either way,
the team stacked.
Kucherov and Stamkos is the best top pair in the league. You know, the best top line combination in the league.
Yeah.
And then Braden Point is a great second line center for them.
Sure.
That team's going to be really good until Stamkos and Kucherov need to be re-signed. And it's insane.
Stamkos was just signed last year.
I know. That's what I'm saying. P.K. Subban, you know, a very good Nashville team. They don't have too many studs. You know, Philip Forsberg could have developed into that. Victor Arvidsson could still develop into that. There's definitely some young talent on that team. But P.K. Subban led the way. And then, you know, Drew...
I mean, they also have Roman Josi.
That's fair.
I mean...
But Roman Josi is more of a defensive defenseman. And P.K. Subban...
No, he's two-way guy, for sure.
Not as much as Subban is. When they're on the ice together, Josi takes the stay-at-home role. Because P.K. Subban has no problem leading a rush.
Maybe. But I don't...
Either way, their defensive core is stacked.
Oh, for sure.
Even a Matthias Ekholm type guy.
Right.
Like, that team is stacked. Drew Doughty. He's Drew Doughty. What do you even really need to say?
Right.
He's had a stellar career. Norris Trophy. Hedman, Doughty, Subban. Who you got?
It's weird because they left some of the bigger guys, you know, off of this list. A guy like John Carlson, who led all defensemen in points at 68 points. A guy like Brent Burns, who had 67 points. Victor Hedman.
Eric Carlson's always in the running.
John Klingberg, who had 67 points.
He's, by the way, he's kind of in that ghost category.
A little bit.
Very, very good and also real young.
I mean, guys 1 through 4. In scoring, Carlson, Burns, Klingberg, and Ghost.
Yeah.
None of them were nominated for the Norris. Hedman's the fifth best guy.
Which I'm fine
with 63 points.
The Norris in recent years hasn't been best defenseman. It's been best defenseman with a bunch of points.
Yeah, they should make it. They should split it up and do best offensive defenseman, best defensive defenseman. I think that's the best way to handle it. But I think I go with Victor Hedman on this one. I mean,
okay, that's solid. I'm gonna go with Subban, but I think it's close.
He had 63 points in 77 games and was a plus 32. So
okay,
where Doughty and Subban, Doughty was 23, plus 23, Subban was plus 18.
Yep. So, you know, we have a little bit of a difference there. Next is the Lady Bing, which is a weird trophy, right? It's not really dictated by stats. It's kind of personality. It's penalty minutes. Yeah, like, it's weird. Lady Bing is most gentlemanly, which is weird in the NHL that they even care.
Yeah.
Because these guys carry 5-foot-long clubs and have sticks on their – and skates weird on their feet. Anyway, it's Alexander Barkov from Florida, William Karlsson from Vegas, and Ryan O'Reilly from Buffalo. Do you have any feelings on who's going to win this one?
No.
I feel like Barkov plays with an edge. I don't know if he should be most gentlemanly.
But so does O'Reilly. I would give it to O'Reilly.
It might just be Karlsson.
I don't know.
And this might be the heart without the heart, because he deserves some sort of award. Because he did have a stellar season out there in Vegas.
Yeah, of course.
So I think this is going to be William Karlsson, not because he was, necessarily the most gentlemanly on the ice, but just because they want to give Vegas an award for the stellar season they had. Right.
No, I'm going to go with Ryan O'Reilly.
Okay.
For no real reason. I'm just throwing out a name.
Yep. Another trophy in a similar category is the Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy. This trophy is for dedication to hockey.
Yep.
I think we saw Rich Peverly win this a couple years ago.
When he collapsed on the bench.
After he came back from that.
Yep.
This year you have Brian Boyle, who is far and away the winner of this trophy.
You think so?
Yeah. And then Roberto Luongo in Florida and Jordan Staal in Carolina. Jordan Staal has a
I was about to get into that. Yeah.
We're not going to go too much into this.
No, no.
Boyle's coming back from cancer.
Was it cancer?
I think it was leukemia, wasn't it?
Was it? I thought it was like MS. I thought he battled.
You looked that up real quick.
Yeah, well.
So Brian Boyle was fighting a career-threatening injury or career-threatening illness. Roberto Luongo had that beautiful speech after the shooting at Parkland High School.
Okay, sorry, you were right. It is leukemia.
It was leukemia, right?
For Boyle. Sorry about that.
So Boyle came back from leukemia this year. Roberto Luongo had that incredible speech after the shooting at Parkland High School.
Sure.
I mean, the speech was great.
Sure.
Okay. And Jordan Staal, him and his wife had some pretty severe issues this year.
Yeah.
And
lost a child.
Yeah. And we're not going to go too much into that. I think it's Boyle.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but it come back from.
But it's definitely not Bobby Lou.
It's not.
Either Boyle or Staal. Yeah, it's a two horse race.
I think it's Boyle. Just, I mean, coming back from leukemia. I mean, that's a tough. It's a tough thing to do. If I'm not mistaken, didn't he go to the All-Star game to represent his team and all that? And
I think so.
It was nice to see.
It was a great story.
Yeah.
We're going to skip the Calder. We're going to save that because I think that's a good one.
Oh, you're going to save that till the end?
Yeah.
All right.
Next, we have the Mark Messier NHL Leadership Award, which, again, it's hard to quantify this one. You have Derek Englund out in Vegas, Wayne Simmonds for your Philadelphia Flyers, and Blake Wheeler for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
Who you got?
Again, for no specific reason, I'm going to go Blake Wheeler.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I mean,
I don't know what they look for in this.
Right. It's super difficult to call this one because if it's based on leadership, I wonder
is
if
this
like,
one,
the players
I was
vote,
just about to ask. Is
I
this
think
the
this
players
might be
vote?
Player voting.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I think it's probably going to be England.
You think so?
Because they're going to go for the Vegas guy and that whole story is great.
Maybe.
Either way, I'm going to go England. You have Blake Wheeler. And the reason the Vegas story is so great is the same exact reason that the Jack Adams Award is more of a slam dunk than it's ever been in history.
This is the lock of the century.
Right. It's Jared Bednar for the Colorado Avalanche, Bruce Cassidy for the Boston Bruins, and then your far and away unanimous 100% winner is Gerard Gallant for the Las Vegas Golden
Knights.
Yeah,
it's a lock.
It's a lock.
I mean, after the season
they
had.
You take an expansion team to the Stanley Cup.
Well, granted, okay. This is voted on before the playoffs.
Then you take an expansion team to 109 points and the division title.
It's absurd.
Come on.
It's the lock of the century.
Right. This is a stone cold lock. It's an absolute slam dunk.
Yeah, I agree.
Gerard Gallant, congratulations, you won. We're going to skip the heart and save that to the end, too.
Okay.
The King Clancy Award.
I was looking at the different one.
Yeah.
Ted Lindsay? You want to go with that
one? Yeah, we'll skip that one, too.
Okay.
Because that's kind of connected to the heart in a lot of ways.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The King Clancy Memorial Trophy. I don't even know what this is for. Do you?
I just looked it up. Hold up.
Is this another?
For humanitarian honor.
Humanitarian honor. Okay. Yeah,
it's another weird
one. The nominees are the Sedin twins.
Which is weird.
I know. Out of Vancouver. PK Subban in Nashville. And Jason Zucker out in Minnesota.
I'm going Sedin twins.
I'm going Subban. Like, okay. Everyone knows about his charitable contributions.
$10 million or whatever it was to
Montreal
Children's Hospital.
He's
right.
Still actively involved in the community up there.
Oh, of course.
He's an absolute class act when it comes to his treatment of the city of Montreal, even after the way the Montreal Canadiens treated him.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with the Sedins just because it's kind of the last hurrah almost.
Yeah, and they might be active in the community. I don't really know. Same with Jason Zucker. You don't hear about it.
You don't know.
I've heard about PK Subban, so I'm going with PK Subban.
Right.
All right, now GM of the year, Kevin Cheveldayoff of the Winnipeg Jets.
This is a lock, too.
Oh, yeah. Steve Yzerman of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and then your clear slam dunk winner is George McPhee of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a slam dunk.
You put this team together, and they've got 109 points in the division title.
Yeah.
William Karlsson scored 43 goals after scoring six.
Right, and not only did you build a great team to get to the Stanley Cup Finals this year,
you've got a ton of
bamboozled other teams into getting their future assets.
Yeah, I think they still have Columbus as first.
They have a couple first.
I think they have some picks from Detroit.
Yep.
Well, they sent
a first, second, a third for Tatar, but
right. But either way, and if you think about that, if you look at the first they have this year, they sent their own pick to Detroit.
Yeah.
So that first round pick,
30th overall pick,
is number 30 overall. That's a second, essentially.
Basically, yeah.
You did ridiculous. That's also a slam dunk. Bruce Cassidy, or I'm sorry, not Bruce Cassidy.
It was Cheveldayoff and
Gerard
Stevie
Gallant.
Y.
Gerard Gallant, slam dunk.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the general manager. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Or George McPhee, slam dunk. I'm sorry. Yeah,
McPhee, slam dunk, and Gallant, slam dunk.
And Gallant, slam dunk. So that leaves us with the Calder, the Lindsay, and the Hart.
Yep.
Calder's best rookie. The Hart is most valuable player in the NHL. And then the Lindsay is most outstanding player in the
voted
NHL.
On by the players.
That is voted on by the players? Okay, I was not aware of that. Yep. So we're going to start with the Calder.
Okay.
And this one, I think, is pretty clear.
I think so.
Matthew Barzal, New York Islanders.
Yep.
Brock Besser, Vancouver Canucks. Clayton Keller, Arizona Coyotes.
It's Matthew Barzal.
Now, the reason, by the way, that I think Max Domi is going to do really well out in Arizona is Clayton Keller.
Maybe.
And also Dylan Strom when he comes up.
Sure. If we ever see Dylan Strom, we already talked
about
Dylan
Strom. We talked about the Strom brothers here. I think it's Matthew Barzal.
Yeah.
He had an absolutely insane season for a mediocre Islanders team. If John Tavares stays in New York, Matthew Barzal is a big reason why.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he had 85 points in 82 games.
As a rookie.
And that was after he went the first five or six games of the season without a point.
Right. And he just lit the world on fire.
So after that, he was just on fire.
I could see Brock Besser getting some votes. I don't think Clayton Keller got too many just because Arizona was so bad.
Yeah, but Clayton Keller started the year on fire. Yeah, he had six or seven in the first week or two.
Yeah, but
and so then he just slowed down.
There were some other rookies who had really good starts, right? Will Butcher had a good start, fell off the map.
Yep.
You know, there was a couple guys who had strong starts and fell off the map.
Then you have people doing the opposite, where Nolan Patrick was invisible the first month or two of the season, and he turned it on in the end.
Right. If this vote was from January to May, Nolan Patrick might have been in contention.
Yeah, but it's still Barzal.
He just had such a rough start.
It's still Barzal's.
I agree. And now, so the Ted Lindsay Award.
Yep.
It's the most outstanding player in the NHL as voted by the NHL Players Association. Taylor Hall, New Jersey, had an insane season.
Yeah, of course.
Nathan MacKinnon, again, stellar season. Carried his team to the playoffs. You could say the same about Hart.
Yep. You mean Hall.
Or Hall, that's what I mean.
Yep.
A little bit of a Freudian slip there. And then Connor McDavid, who led the league in scoring.
Yeah.
Now, your scoring leader is always going to get a nod here, more than likely. This one's actually really tough.
No, it's McDavid.
You think?
Yeah, he had 108 points to McKinnon's 97.
And also,
and Hall's 93.
And also, McDavid was playing with nobody around him.
Right.
To be fair, now, Claude Giroux should have got a nomination here.
Maybe. If Edmonton makes the playoffs, McDavid's in contention for the Hart.
I think
there's not a doubt in my mind.
If Edmonton makes the playoffs, McDavid has the Hart.
Yeah.
Locked up.
Yeah.
So. Now, they did the right thing and left him off the nomination.
Right. I'd be curious to see how many votes he got.
I guarantee you he got as many as Giroux.
You think so?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm really interested to see these lists because for the Lindsay and for the Hart, Claude Giroux was left off of both. Yeah. Finished second in the league in scoring, 102 points. In a lot of ways, carried the team to the playoffs. Was left off of both of the two major awards. It's definitely a little disappointing. That being said, you know, we have the finalists we have. And for the Lindsay, we have Hall, McKinnon, McDavid. And you have McDavid?
I have McDavid, yeah.
I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
Because the NHL wants him to get something. The NHL wants him to get something just right. Because he's the new Crosby. You know. But
yeah, and 108 points is nothing to scoff at.
No, and especially because he was playing with nobody.
Right.
Basically. Drysdale had a down year. The team was just bad around him.
Right.
Yeah, I'll go McDavid. And then for the Hart, it's Hall and McKinnon. And then also Anže Kopitar, who we've already touched on in this debate. Quite simply, I'm going McKinnon here.
I agree with you.
And here's why. Hall is playing in front of Corey Schneider. He's got some other good pieces around him. Nobody insane, but he's got some good other pieces. He's got a good goalie. Kopitar is playing with Drew Doughty, one of the best defensemen in the world. Who's Nathan McKinnon playing with?
I mean, he still has
Gabe Landeskog, who had a bad year.
He has Mikko Rantanen.
Who's 19.
He's got...
Who's their goalie?
Varlamov.
Who's mediocre at best.
Okay, yeah, no, I agree. Tyson Barry, who's a solid piece.
And this is also the same year, by the way, that they traded Matt Duchene away.
I know, that's unreal, isn't it?
Like, remember this team was in the basement when they traded Duchene away.
Yep.
They traded him away, and McKinnon said, all right, boys, get on my back, we're going to the playoffs.
Yep.
It's Nathan McKinnon.
I agree with it.
Hardcore.
Yep.
All right, that gets us done with the NHL awards. Before we wrap up here, we do have some Flyers picks to talk about.
Yeah.
The Flyers currently sit at number 14 and number 19 in the upcoming NHL entry draft. The number 14 pick is a result of the Braden Schenn trade.
Yep.
This is the second first-round pick to go along with Morgan Frost last year. And then the 19th pick is their own.
Okay.
Now, there are, broadly speaking, three options. Flyers can move up, stand pat, or move back.
Those are the three. Yep.
Broadly speaking, which of those three do you think they're going to do?
With the way that Hextall's done business, they'll probably stand pat and just because he's patient. I don't see him trading up. I think you could almost rule that out. As much as I would like them to move up and maybe get a guy, most mock drafts nowadays you see Zadina slipping a little bit.
Yeah.
If they could package both of those up and get Zadina.
Yeah, really recently Zadina has been slipping. Like within the last 2 or 3 days. Montreal just is determined to screw their team up.
They need a number one center and maybe, you know, Kokkaniemi is that. And they also need defensemen, maybe Quentin Hughes or, Boquist or a Dobson or that piece.
Okay, but, so Buffalo's taken Dolan. Carolina's taken Svechnikov.
Yeah, I think it's
those are pretty well determined at this point. News out of Carolina is that they're pretty set on Svechnikov unless for some reason Buffalo passes on Dolan, which just isn't going
to
happen.
That's not going to happen. That's like the most perfect piece to fall to them.
Right. So number three comes up. Montreal.
Yep.
Who's there? We got Quinn Hughes, Brady Tkachuk.
Quinn or Quinton. Nobody knows.
His name is Quinton. His nickname
goes by
is Quinn.
Quinn, right.
Just like your Michael Mike right. Gelato.
Yeah, I got it.
So three comes up. Montreal's on the clock. You have Kotkaniemi's up there. Hughes, Zadina, maybe a guy like Bockfist or Brady Tkachuk. There are some definite names that could go as high as four or as three.
Bouchard, Dobson. If, yeah, there's a couple guys
if
there.
If Zadina slips out of that three spot, right, because forever it was your top three was set and then it slipped after that. But if Zadina has slipped out of that three spot, hey, maybe he's the video game prospect.
What's that?
Maybe Philip Zadina is the video game prospect.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's why he's slipping because they all found out about his Fortnite addiction.
Right. Well, I don't know. Because
anyway,
they said he was a drafted
I know.
Prospect. So
it was a joke.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway.
Went over my
so
head.
So If who out of those next level guys, who would you want the Flyers to take? Out of the Kokoniemi, the Hughes, the Zadina, the Wallstrom, the Bockfist, the Tkachuk, you know, that kind of mid 3 to 8 level prospect.
I like Zadina.
Okay, you like Zadina.
Yeah, I like Zadina. And I like Wallstrom.
Okay, I like Oliver Wallstrom coming out of the United States national team
development
program.
Development team, yep. I like Zadina. I mean, he was projected to, I mean, he's all season top 3 pick. So, I mean, he still could fall, but he's projected to be that. So if they could somehow package and picks up, get Zadina, that I'd love that. He's a winger. It's what they need. No. They need a top, you know, elite winger. A guy like Wallstrom, I love his shot. He's not exactly the fastest guy, and he doesn't have the greatest hockey sense, at least not yet.
Okay.
But he's got a really nice shot, quick release. I like him a lot.
Okay. I heard you like the quick release.
Is that so?
Anyway.
But I'm not – like, I like – the skill level to a degree of Brady Tkachuk.
Right.
He plays more of a power forward.
I feel like he's the most NHL ready.
Out of those next guys?
Out of that second tier.
Maybe I would go Zadina. Yeah, Zadina and him are close. But I agree. I think it's close. But again, I don't think long-term power forwards are really a way to build a team. And if you're picking that high and he gets picked that high, I just don't love it.
Yeah.
Just because I think that, I've said it before, power forwards.
Right.
So they're a dime a dozen.
If Montreal does go with Kokoniemi, which, you know, a lot of the mock drafts these days are kind of edging towards.
Either Kokoniemi or Hughes or.
Yeah. Right. I think it's more likely that Montreal trades back at that point.
Maybe. I could
see
that.
To 5 or 6, because I think Kokoniemi falls that far.
Yeah.
Just because there's more pure talent above
them.
Yeah,
I think Kokoniemi would be a reach at 3. So I think they could get some value
back
there.
If they drop back to 5 or 6 and maybe do a deal with Detroit or, you know, Arizona or Vancouver or one of those teams in that 5 through 7 range to fall back and get Kokoniemi, do you think the Flyers can do a trade? Okay, so let's just say they trade with Detroit. Detroit moves to 3. They'll take Zadina.
Yep.
Do you think Ottawa or Arizona would be willing to trade their pick and, you know, the Flyers can get a guy like Tkachuk or Wallstrom or Hughes or one of these, like, premium...
I don't know.
Premium guys?
Ottawa's interesting because they're an absolute dumpster fire right now.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious if maybe there's something bigger to be had with Ottawa. Right? If you offer them 14, 19, maybe a guy like Travis Sanheim.
Okay.
And then you go up and get Bockfist or Quinn Hughes... or one of these guys who's, you know, a top-tier defensive prospect behind Rasmus Dahlin.
Yep.
Now, would you do that?
14-19 Sanheim.
Let's say it's 14-19 Sanheim, your 2019 first.
No,
let me finish.
Okay, go ahead.
Number 4, and Mike Hoffman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right.
I'll do that. Yep.
That's why I said let me finish.
Yep.
Turns out when I finish, you have more information to make your decision on.
Yep.
Yeah, because if you guys missed it, there's some big storms going on over in Ottawa.
They're a mess.
Between Mike Hoffman and Erik Karlsson and their respective wives and fiancés.
And there's more than that. I don't even really want to get into with sexual assault allegations and things like that.
Thing. But it's a whole big thing, and one of Karlsson or Hoffman is going to be out of Ottawa this summer.
They both probably will be.
And it would probably be better for them if they both do. Now, I don't necessarily know if I want Hoffman from a character standpoint, but from an on-ice standpoint, if you can add a guy like Hoffman and one of these borderline NHL-ready defensemen, like a Quinn Hughes or... a Bockfist or a Bouchard sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah.
Let's break this down again. 14, 19, Sanheim, your 2019 first for number 4 and Hoffman.
I think it's close. I think I would do it.
You might need to do a little more to get Ottawa into it.
Maybe. I would be close to do it. I actually think a better option would be move if defense is the route, move down to 7, 8, or 9 and get a guy like Dobson, Because I think Dobson's a more complete defenseman, whereas Quentin Hughes and Bonquist are more offensive. They're the smaller Torrey Krugs and Shane Goss's Bears of the world.
Right.
So I think Dobson's just a better overall defenseman. So I'd probably go, you know, trade down 7, 8, 9. Dobson should be there in that range.
But in the speedy NHL, I would love a guy like Quentin Hughes.
I mean, sure. Yeah, he's a great player for sure.
I would love to have Shane Goss's Bear on my first power play unit and Quentin Hughes on my second.
Yeah.
In 2 or 3 years when he's developed out a little bit.
I was going to say 5'10", 176, not a big guy at all.
No.
You know,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. I prefer kind of the speedier defenseman in the way the NHL is going. Your defensemen have to be able to move the puck. It's less important that your defensemen lay massive body checks and shut down defensively.
And Dobson isn't that guy.
No, he's not.
He's a two-way guy.
He's about the same size and build as Ivan Provorov. Right? And I don't know if he's their skill level-ish, but that's kind of a mid-level between the small, speedy ghost and the big, hulking Chara type.
Right.
Or Sam Marin.
Right.
You know, you get the guy in the middle. You get the guy who's the same size as, like, a Robert Hagg, although he's kind of a big dude. You know, a Brandon Manning-sized guy.
Right.
You guys can let us know. You know, the Flyers could also trade back in this draft. We didn't really talk about that, but we are out of time.
Real quick, let's get into who they could get at 14 or 19. I mean, what if they stand pat? You know, where can they go?
First of all, if 14 comes around and Joe Valino is still on the board, you take Joe Valino.
I agree with you.
And one of the reasons I say that is because this time a year ago, he was the consensus number one, number two, number three pick. He was a top three player in this draft.
It was Dolan, Svechnikov, Valino. Those are the three.
And not even in that order.
No, not in this
order. Valino was at the top of that list a lot of times.
Right.
And he was definitely second on that list most of the time.
Yeah.
Joe Valino had kind of that Nolan Patrick problem where he had some injury issues in his draft year. He ended up going from one Q team to another.
Yep, he got traded.
He got traded. I think he was unhappy, and I think they changed coaches where he was. So he got a trade to another organization.
Situations are weird.
Right. He absolutely lit the world on fire after he got traded to Drummondville.
Yep.
Joe Valino was going to be a really, really good NHL player.
Yeah. 6'1", 194.
It might not be right away. He might need a year or two in the AHL. But he will be a very good NHL player.
I agree.
He'll be an all-star by the time he's 25.
I agree.
If he falls to 14, you absolutely take him. If he doesn't fall for whatever reason, I like guys like Ryan Merkley.
I like Merkley too.
Get another defenseman. Yeah. I like Rasmus Kupari.
I like him a lot. He's got speed.
If you're going to pick up another center.
I like speed.
I like Saren Noel, especially if your plan is to trade Wayne Simmons or not re-sign Wayne Simmons. Because he kind of serves that same role.
I don't know if that's real relevant because Noel's probably a couple years away anyway.
That's fair. But if you're not gonna extend Wayne Simmons.
Right.
I really, really, really like Jet Wu.
Okay.
Coming out of the Moose Jaw.
Yeah.
A good defenseman who I think could be a real asset on this top six in a couple of years.
Yeah, he could.
So there's.
I agree with you.
Anybody that I missed that you like?
No, I'm hearing guys like Bodie Wild. Is that his name?
Yeah, I'm not thrilled with Bodie Wild.
He's got off the ice issues, and
yeah, he's underwhelming for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know that's a name a lot of people like.
Off the ice issues don't matter, right, Mike?
They do if you can prove if he proves to be the best Flyer of all time. I'll take him. I don't care what he does off the ice. But you're a prospect and you're an unknown. So, you know, I'll pass on them.
Anyway, you guys can let us know what you think the Flyers are going to do with their draft picks in the 2019 NHL entry draft.
2018.
That's what I said. That's what I meant. Shut up. And you can let us know on Twitter at YWTPodcast. You can also find me on Twitter at K Collington and Mike at Mike_Giletto. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and lastwordonsports.com. Our logo is created for us by Ben at BennyTheJet55 or at FuzzForge. He was a guest a couple of weeks ago. You guys can go listen to that. And until next week, we will know not only the results of the awards, but also who the Flyers took in the draft. And we'll probably talk about that a little bit.
Yeah,
next week.
Give some breakdown of who they got.
And as we do that, we'll see you guys next week.
We're not gonna be fucking sunk this year.
We're the Stanley Cup champions! Yeah! Woo! Yeah! Woo! It's yours, boys and girls and boys.